Hello, 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 listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Northern Nightmares.
Hello.
We are so happy to have you. Mom, why don't you tell us a little bit about your week?
I'm going to time travel a little bit. We're going to go back in time about a month because we're going to talk about Labor Day weekend.
Yes.
Yes.
We've already talked about most of the things for this week at the time of this recording. And so we're pulling from a little bit of material that was happening while we were doing the Israel Keys episode and not able to record.
Yes, because you're deep into research and...
Yes, knee deep.
Knee deep in Israel Keys crap.
Gross.
So we went down to Kenai for... We stayed 2 nights, 3 days. Mm-hmm. We went down to Kenai and we went fishing on the river.
Yeah, right next to Sterling, which we talked about in the Scott and Amy Fandel case. Yes.
Yes. So it was so much fun. It rained and it rained every day. We did have bright spots of sunshine, which was nice. But we first get down there. We went down on Saturday morning. We get down there. We're going into Sterling. We're about to our turn off to the lake to put in the boat. And we're like, it's really rainy. Are we ready to get wet yet? And we couldn't check into our hotel until 3 o'clock or something. So we decide, let's go on into Soldotna. Let's have lunch and we'll see how the rain's doing. And then we'll be closer to checking into the hotel. It's like 11 o'clock in the morning. So we went down to Soldotna. We had lunch at this little cafe. It was really good. And we came out and it was sprinkling. We're like, okay, we can do this. So we ran up and put the boat in. So we start at the lake and we drift down. We drift down between 3 and 4 miles from the lake and then we'll motor back up and we'll try it again. And we were fishing with trout poles, which are smaller, lighter weight fishing poles. Mm-hmm. And the salmon are running up in the Kenai River. And there's lots of different kinds of salmon. There's 5 kinds of salmon that run that river. And the silvers, it's the big draw right now is the silvers are running. Well, the silvers run a little higher in the river. And they
swim in the middle of the river instead of at the bottom.
Or, yes. So we were fishing off the bottom and we were getting a lot of red salmon, a lot of chum, which are dog.
And humpy.
Yeah, humpies. So, which are fun.
Weird looking things.
They're weird looking fish. And we were... hoping for silvers, coho, because they're my favorite salmon to eat. Kings are too greasy. Chum are what they sound like. Chum and dogs. And then humpies, they aren't very good either. And the fish that we were catching have already really turned red. Once they're in freshwater for like a week, they start turning the red color. And so they turn into like this different salmon. The meat isn't as good and that sort of thing. So we were hoping for some silvers, but we were at the end of the river where you can't use bait and you have to use a single hook. You can use a lure, but no bait.
It's very, very heavily
it's
regulated.
It's very regulated, that river. So
very, very regulated.
We weren't in the area that we could fish with bait. So we weren't really caring about silvers because if you're fishing for silvers, you're going to anchor the boat. You're going to be in one spot in the rain and you're just going to be letting your line sit in the water. It's not right. Nearly as much fun as what we were doing where you cast it out, you reel it in or you let it bump along the bottom and you know, you get a fish and pull it in. So the first day started out and I caught like 19 fish or something the first day and Heather caught, Heather and Quentin each caught about a dozen.
Yeah.
We weren't really keeping track the first day, but we caught a lot of fish. We caught all the different kinds of salmon except for silvers. And I caught one Dolly Varden. That was the only trout type fish that we caught. And that's kind of what we were going for, but I'm sure those little fish are so full on salmon eggs that they were not hungry chasing these baitless lures.
Right.
And we do all catch and release, except for the silvers we would have kept. Second day we go out, and we had moments of sun. We were out all day the second day. It was a lot of fun, and we just didn't want to call it. We had a hotel room and stuff. We were like, yeah, we don't care.
Right.
So we went out the second day, and then we really started, like, it was a contest to see how many fish we caught. So somebody would catch them like, oh, Quentin got a fish or, oh, Mom's won. And we had our little scoreboard, 1-1-0 or 0-0-1 or whatever. And every time we caught a fish, we'd raise our score. And the second day, How many fish did we catch?
Gosh, I don't remember.
I had it written down.
You smoked us on all of the days.
I smoked you, except for the third day.
Except for the third day. Quentin beat us. Quentin won.
And I only got like five.
And I got like two. Right?
The third day was bad for you. The second day was so much fun. And Quentin was just getting smoked. He was not catching anything. I think that was the day I caught the humpy. And it was so weird because I was reeling in. I'm like, I feel like I'm snagged on the bottom. It was just this weird weight on my pole. So I was reeling in and Dad was like, do I need to back up the boat? And I was like, yeah, probably. So he backed up to where my line was in the water and I kept reeling it in. And he's like, well, you're making progress. You're pulling in something. I'm like, well, it's probably a big stick or something, like dead weight. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a humpy, this big humpback salmon. Ugly salmon.
They're so ugly.
And there was a lure in its back that was a treble hook. So it had three hooks on it. And my line had got caught on the hook that was on his back. So somebody else's lure that had lost this fish that had caught him in the back. Mm-hmm. We pulled him out. We got both lures off of him, got him all untangled and set him free so he could go do his thing. But that was the exciting fish that we caught.
It was weird.
Quentin caught some monsters. You caught some monsters that we couldn't get to the boat. And it was funny.
I got a couple monsters to the boat, but they would always get off my line before I got a chance to get them all the way to the boat.
Well, it was funny because the way we were keeping score to keep it fair was if we saw the fish and
if everybody saw the fish,
it counted.
It counts.
Because they would get pretty close to the boat and then spit it out. So I know that throughout the weekend in 3 days, we caught 91 fish.
Yes.
When we figured it all out. In 3 days, three people. Dad caught one because he was captaining the boat. So he only fished for a minute and he caught a fish on his first cast.
Right.
And that was his one. So it was a lot of fun. We saw a lot of fish. It was.
On the first day, we got drenched. We got so soaked and the dog was soaked and he looked so unhappy.
You'll have to post that picture.
I'll put up the picture, but
we had dad finally put his hat on his head so that he would
Radar's head because we were worried about it getting into his ears. And he was just looking really sad and just like a drowned rat.
Oh, he was having so much fun though. Every time a fish got caught, he would, if somebody said fish on, he was right there to see it.
He
to the
just
boat
loved and to watch him.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what he'd do if he got one.
I don't know either.
We had one flopping in the boat.
On the second day, there was a seal in the water, which I think is why we didn't catch as many.
And we were, you know, we put in at the lake, it's considered milepost 50 of the river. So that seal was 50 miles from the mouth of the river.
50 miles inland, which is not something you see.
But he's chasing those salmon.
I guess. I didn't realize.
It really, our fishing went
when the seal thumbs was
down
there,
when
right.
the seal was around.
And it was when we'd motor the boat to a place where the seal wasn't, we'd catch fish. And then the seal would swim up and we'd stop catching fish.
Yeah.
It was very frustrating. Away. We called him Harold and he was the enemy of the day, of the weekend.
Harold the harbor seal.
Right.
He was our nemesis. Harold! We're going to catch Harold. And we won't
release
him. Every time
we had a really big fish or something, we'd be like, I caught Harold.
It was a lot of fun. It was a nice hotel room. It was, except for the pool.
Oh my God. Don't even talk about it. I'm so mad still.
They had a part out.
It's a month later.
So the pool was out of order and we couldn't even go into the hot tub or anything.
Looking forward to the pool.
We got that hotel because it's the only one down there that has an indoor swimming pool. And a hot tub.
I had been looking forward to that pool for the entire trip. I was so excited to go swimming because we don't have really public pools up here.
Right.
We don't have a place where like the public can go swimming. You can sign a subscription for a fitness club that has a pool. There's one up here, but it's ridiculously expensive and hard to get out of once you're in it. And our family kind of learned that the hard way. But it's just, there's no option if you like to swim, and I freaking love it. So it's very, I was so excited.
Heather was even
thinking, really upset.
She wasn't going to go fishing
one day so that I could sit at the pool and do some research. And
fishing was way more fun.
But yeah.
Fishing was way more fun. Like our arms were sore from pulling in the fish.
So dumb. Anyway.
So hopefully when this airs on the first weekend, after the first weekend in October, Dad and I are going to go back down for an overnight trip and see if we can't. It's our last hurrah of the fall. We'll see if we can't catch some more fish and just me and Dad and the dog.
Oh, that'll be fun.
We'll see how it goes.
Oh, yeah. We'll keep you posted.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's talk some murder with my mom. All right, everybody. Today we are going to be all the way back in 2016 in Perryville, Alaska, which is on the Aleutian Chain.
Okay, how far out?
It's like halfway, so that doesn't make sense to a lot of our listeners, but basically, and it's the tiniest little town. You are not going to see it on the back there, but it is, okay, I eat my words. Thanks,
it's
Mom.
It's still on the peninsula, so it's still like connected to land. It's before you get out into the Alaskan islands, probably halfway down the peninsula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Down on that, you call it his arm sticking out.
Yeah, yeah. So it's about picturing our image of this large animated man that I see every time I look at the face of Alaska. If you're confused what we're talking about, go ahead and check out our Instagram. There's a nice little rudimentary drawing, to say the least, that I did that kind of showcases what I see. Anyway, if you're looking at the man's kind of outstretched arm, the very beginning of that arm, like around the bicep area, is the Alaska Peninsula. And on that peninsula, which is still technically connected to the state, obviously, because it's a peninsula, is the microscopic town of Perryville, Alaska.
Just because it's connected to the mainland, there's no roads, there's no way to get there except for boat or airplanes. So there's no roads in Perryville, like to anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. As of 2020, the population of Perryville is right at about 50 people. That's it.
50?
50 people in the entire area. But back in 2016, when our story takes place, it was closer to 100. So people have been steadily leaving the area, probably due to a lack of resources and civilization.
No kidding.
Comforts.
A whole lot of nothing but bears out there.
Yeah,
exactly. And 50 people.
And lakes and water. But like I said, back in 2016, it was pushing 100. So of those 100 people, there were two men that we're going to talk about today living within Perryville. And they were 31-year-old Joseph Peterson and 31-year-old Ol Shangen.
Ol, like O-L?
O-L-E.
Oh.
Ol Shangen.
Joseph. That was his given name, not like a nickname?
Yeah, that's his real name.
Okay.
Joseph was a really cool guy. He had a really loving family, which included a young son. I don't know if he was married at this point, but I do know that he never missed a football game. His favorite team was the Seattle Seahawks. And he played guitar. He was described as an all-around good guy who always had a smile to share. Ol Shangen, on the other hand, not the greatest guy. Involved with law enforcement from a very young age. I mean, for a whole gamut of things. Pretty petty until the early 2000s. But for the most part, in his younger years, it was drunk driving. It was...
with their 2 miles of road?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Maybe drunk operation of a four-wheeler or something. I don't know. But in addition to that, there was some burglary. There was some
home invasion. Do you
know what
the police force is in Perry? Or do they rely on the
troopers? I'm guessing it's a VPSO. If that. Okay. They would be lucky to have that with a population of 50. Only 100. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't say for sure. It sounds like there was a tribal council that was in place in Perryville that kind of oversaw a lot of the judiciary goings on. And if there was ever anything big that required more in-depth policing, they would go to the troopers.
I gotcha.
In the early 2000s, Ol actually, this is gross, Ol Shangen was convicted of child sexual abuse against a victim who was between the ages of 13 and 15.
Oh.
He also, in the years following refused to register as a sex offender. So,
which is his own charge.
Yeah, he got charged multiple times for that as well. So he spent a lot of time in jail, in and out of jail. But he and Joseph had grown up together, and they had known each other for years and years and years, and they remained relatively close friends, you know, in spite of everything that Ole was doing, which was
in a town of 50 or 100 people, when you go to school with somebody, they're pretty much your only friend because they're the only person in your class.
Right. And that's not to say that Joseph ever condoned what was going on at all. And that's not the impression that I got of who Joseph was as a person. Obviously, I don't know either of them personally, so I couldn't say for sure, but I know that they were friendly. And I assume, based on things that were said about Joseph, based on things that were said by the family, that it wasn't condoning his behavior at all. But, I mean, you know a person long enough.
Right.
You're willing to overlook or just not talk about some things. Our story picks up on July 16th of 2016. Joseph and Ole Shenjin were really good friends, as I had said. They had grown up together, they spent a considerable amount of their childhood together, and they had known each other pretty much their entire lives. Ole was working as a handyman at the time, not only for the village of Perryville, but also for the surrounding areas as well. On July 16th, it was a Saturday. I can't give you any weather data because the area is so sparsely populated that it wasn't really recorded anywhere that I could find.
Probably not Perry, maybe, I don't know, somewhere else.
Well, there's not a whole lot of civilization in the Alaska Peninsula.
You'd have to do, like, marine weather, like from NOAA or something.
Yeah, and I didn't, so I don't have that.
What day of the year?
July 16th.
Could be rainy.
Yeah. So this is about the same time.
July 31st was the other case.
Yeah, the Judy Lee Guthrie case. It's episode number 29, if you want to go check it out. But these are happening
within a couple weeks.
Much within a couple weeks.
One's on one side of the state, and the other side of the peninsula.
Yeah. Right. So Ole was working as a handyman for hire for the areas surrounding Perryville. He had been invited to do some work around the house for a couple that was living in Ivanoff Bay, which is its own little community. Of course, right next to Ivanoff Bay. It's about a 45-minute...
Right next to Perry, you mean?
It's a 45-minute boat ride from Perryville. Yeah, it's a boat ride. You don't... And there's no airport or anything in Ivanoff Bay, so you have to go by boat. And it is... it's, like, almost directly west.
Yes, I see this.
Mm-hmm. So...
That'd be quite the boat ride, actually, because you have to go down and around another peninsula.
Yep, you got to snake through some of the bigger islands and things and around another peninsula into, like, this tucked away little bay.
Yep, that makes sense. Okay, so he's going to Ivanoff.
Yes.
Ivanoff Bay.
Ivanoff Bay, which is a tiny, tiny little coastal town. I mean, if you want to call Perryville microscopic, I mean, this would be, like, atom sized. It's so small. So the town's population has been dwindling for quite some time, which eventually led to the closure of the only school in the town in the year of 2000.
Wow.
After the school closed, families left the area at an even faster rate. And it's rumored that by 2016, there were only two houses in the entire town that had people living in them. So it had a population of three people.
In 2016. That's not a town make.
No,
it does not a town make.
It used to be. It's a ghost town, basically.
I got you. That somebody lives in.
It's three people. Mm-hmm. It's one couple named Lori and Alfred Kalmakoff, and then the other house in the area that's populated belongs to Alfred's brother, Alan.
Okay.
But they're doing work. Ole gets hired to do work at Alfred and Lori Kalmakoff's home in Ivanoff Bay. Ole invites Joseph and his wife Vanessa to go, sorry, not Joseph's wife Vanessa, but Ole's wife Vanessa Shenjin to go on this trip as like an extra pair of hands. He's selling it as like, let's do some fishing on the way. We'll make a whole day trip out of it, probably a couple of day trips, a couple of days long trip. Right. If we're going to stop and fish and then go help these guys and then come back.
Well, the weather must not have been very bad if they're taking that boat ride because you're in the ocean.
Right. So Joseph agrees, Vanessa Shenjin, Ol's wife, agrees, and they're all going to make kind of a fun little trip out of it. They board the tiny little boat on the afternoon of July 16th. Joseph would never make it back home to see his family again. Mom's giving me some eyebrows right now.
I am. Like, okay, tell the story.
Yeah. The facts on this case are pretty few and far between. Likely because the case didn't get a lot of media attention at the time. It was so remote that it was really difficult to get the facts kind of straight and get the facts out to the public, and there wasn't a lot of that happening.
I'm guessing there's not an Ivanoff Bay newspaper
for no, the three people. Definitely not.
I'm guessing there's not a Perryville newspaper.
Right.
Yeah.
So the following story, the rest of this episode, is going to be based on what I could gather. It comes from a variety of different places. As always, the sources will be down below, but I do apologize. This is going to be another case where there's just some lacking information, and I did my best to find it, but it just doesn't exist on paper. I do know that at 1:38 a.m., technically the next day, July 17th, Lori Kalmykoff, the owner of the house that they're all at, placed a call not to 911, but instead to the local tribal council member in Perryville. One of the local tribal council members living in Perryville.
Well, these visitors in her house are from there.
Yes.
I'm guessing.
And it's the closest place. It's,
right.
That's the closest civilization of any kind to Ivanoff Bay. So it makes sense that she would call there.
Yes.
I don't know why 911 wasn't called, but they probably would have directed her to the same kind of local area. They probably would have called troopers immediately.
Was that because they didn't show up? Why did she call the tribal?
She called them. That was her first call.
I understand that, but you're just saying that.
No. Okay. Sorry. Let's get into
it. We don't know what happened.
Yes. I apologize.
Why is she calling them?
Well, first off, the tribal council member who received the call didn't answer it because it's the middle of the night. His phone just rings and he lets it go to voicemail.
Okay, so it's early morning hours.
Yes. Lori is the one who left the voicemail, and she is kind of... The phone call itself is weird, but she's asking for a medic to be sent to Ivanoff Bay as soon as possible because, and that's like all the message says.
Okay.
End of message. The tribal council member wakes up sometime later in the night. I don't know exactly how much time had passed, and he immediately calls them back like, what is going on? I need more information than that. The tribal council member got the impression that the people on the other end of the phone, because it was on speakerphone, he could hear the people in the background. They're all trying to talk to him and explain what happened. But he says, a tribal council member says, that everybody was sounding really intoxicated.
Okay.
That fact is not proven.
Okay.
The basic message and contents of the call are that Joseph has been shot in self-defense, and they need to get troopers to Ivanoff Bay as quickly as possible. But by the time the tribal council member had called back, Joseph had already passed away from his injury. So now it's not medic. It's now police need to come. And they're saying it's self-defense. But there's no word on this phone call who did the shooting.
Okay.
Troopers weren't able to make it to Ivanoff Bay for an entire day.
Shocking. They're way the heck out there.
And there's no airport into Ivanoff Bay. So they would have had to fly into Perryville that has an airport and then take a boat to Ivanoff Bay. Would have been the probably the most direct route.
There should be a float plane something, maybe.
Oh, a float plane might have been able to do it. I don't know.
I don't know if there's a lake or something nearby. The
right,
bay,
but there was no like formal airport, is what I'm saying. That doesn't mean that you couldn't land on the water. It takes them a significant amount of time to get there regardless. When the troopers do land and make it to the house, the scene that they walk into was a little chaotic. Joseph was lying where he had been shot. I don't know exactly what room of the house he was in, but he had been hit a total of 3 times. One of the bullets was a non-fatal injury, but the other two would have caused him death incredibly quickly, if not immediately. Those two shots, the two fatal shots, one was to the back of the head and one was to the upper back, but it had entered through the back and then gone forward.
But it was self-defense.
Supposedly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mom's giving me more eyebrows.
The shot that wasn't fatal, do you know where that was?
No. Okay. I'm sorry. Trooper's first and pretty much only order of business was to figure out exactly what had happened. Lori, Alfred, and Vanessa all claim that they weren't in the room when the shots were fired.
Then who was?
Everyone in the house agreed that Ole was the one
okay.
to fire the gun. Ole changes his story about what happened multiple times.
That never happens.
Right. The first story that he tells is that Joseph was threatening to kill everyone in the house and that he was struggling with Alfred in a physical altercation. Ole said that Alfred told him, Ole, to shoot Joseph while they were fighting. So they're struggling, they're like,
shoot
fighting.
Shoot him, shoot him, shoot him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then Ole says that when he got a clear line of sight during the struggle, he shot Joseph twice. Once in the chest and once in the head. But he says he shot him from the front.
That doesn't line up.
No one else in the house backs up this version of events, and the evidence doesn't back up this version of events. The body doesn't back up that version of events. And that's not even to mention the fact that Joseph was shot three times. Like, they're not going to tell.
And not in the chest.
Right, it was in the back. Already pretty unbelievable
right.
to start off. Once Ole realizes that the police aren't buying his version of events, he tells pretty much the same story, but this time he puts Alfred behind the trigger and he's the one struggling with Joseph. That's what he says.
Oh.
So go after Alfred, not me. He's the right. one who did this. And they're just covering for him when they say they weren't in the room.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is also the version of events that he tells to his friends who would eventually ask what happened that night. That story doesn't fly very well either. And so Ole decides to tell the police that Joseph had tried to shoot him during the same bizarre struggle, but that the safety of the gun was engaged so that the gun didn't fire. At which point he took the gun out of Joseph's hands, and used it against him, shooting him three times in order to save his own skin.
This is Ole's story?
Yeah. This is his next story. His third one at this point.
Okay.
This third story is the one that Ole decides to stick with, saying that Joseph had the gun. Joseph tried to fire at him. It didn't go off because the safety was on. So Ole takes the gun and shoots him three times. That version of events doesn't explain why Joseph was shot in the back. If he had gotten the gun out of his hands, he would have been shot in the front.
Yes.
Not only that, but it's just blatantly false because the gun used in the shooting doesn't have safety. It doesn't have a safety mechanism.
Okay.
That would prevent it from firing. So that's a blatant lie. But of course, that's the one he sticks with. So this murder happens in July of 2016. The police are gathering their statements from witnesses and things like that over the
all
next couple
people
of weeks.
That were in the town yeah. at the time of the shooting.
Yeah. But Ole doesn't get arrested until January 31st of 2018.
A year and a half later?
Yes. A year and a half later.
Wow.
I don't even know what to say to that. I have no idea why it would have taken them so long to bring him in. It's kind of frustrating, and it's got to be frustrating for his family, for Joseph's yeah. family. Ole was held without bail and was considered a flight risk at the time of his arrest.
I feel kind of bad for the couple that they were at to fix their house because
they just wanted
like,
a handyman.
I just wanted somebody to fix my house.
Right, I offered him a few beers to do the job, right? And then this happened. Oof. So the trial was delayed, and then it was delayed again, and it was delayed again until COVID hit, actually, believe it or not, which obviously led to it being delayed some more. And this is where I want to talk a little bit about what happened to Alaska, and I'm sure other places when COVID hit in terms of the judicial system. Because
it came to a screeching halt is what
yeah,
it did.
It did. And I'm sure that this is the case in a lot of other states as well. But I just want to give like a full picture of exactly how this happened. Trials aren't able to happen with COVID. You can't have a jury in the same room. It's difficult to get a fair jury selection if all of the jurors have to have access to internet in order to do Zoom calls. And all of these things are complicating the system of how trials are going to commence. At the same time, you've got a huge amount of overcrowding in the jails because trials aren't happening to either clear people to leave jail or
get sent to other places, other yeah. facilities.
So then bail amounts are getting renegotiated to be a lot lower so that they can help solve some of the overcrowding issues, which led to people who should be in jail during awaiting their trial to being released, which is what we saw happen. What was that case? The guy who goes to Oregon? Yeah, it was Shelley in the Shelley Connolly case. We talked about it a little bit. But bails are getting renegotiated left and right. People are getting get people out of prison because the it's too overcrowded and they can't.
And not only that, but like the case you're talking about, he got released to go home to another state because he was at high risk of contracting and having complications from COVID.
Yeah, so not only are they trying to get people out because of overcrowding, but the COVID is causing its own
issues in the facilities.
People who are still in the facilities. And people are getting let out with ridiculous deals.
And the state doesn't want to be responsible for people who die in prison in their custody over COVID. Oh my gosh.
Right. So it's a legal mess. It's a mess. Not only is all of that going on, but also prosecutors are now have a lot of incentive to make crazy deals for people who have been accused of crimes. You could get, I mean, we know this, but you could be accused of very, very serious crimes and get off on almost no jail time because of these crazy deals. They're trying to keep people out of jail and get them to plead guilty so it's on their record, but they're not having them serve jail time because the jails are such a mess because of COVID.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's kind of what happened in this case.
Well, it took him so long to even put charges on this guy.
I know. I mean, right to a speedo trial. Yeah, right. That did not happen here. Not even a speedy arrest. Nothing.
Well, so, speedy arrest isn't a right.
Well, I know, but maybe it should be. In December of 2021, this is like the peak of all of this happening because it's been going on for so long and it's not getting better and COVID's not going away and so many issues. And it's in December of 2021 that Ol Shangjin is offered a deal of a lifetime. He is awaiting trial for murder in the first degree. Guess what they plead him down to?
Assault.
Manslaughter with time served.
Wow.
So he gets released. He pleads guilty, of course, because it gets him out of jail.
Does he have to come up with another story of what happened?
No, nothing. He pleads guilty and he gives them the same story and he gives no motive. He never talks about, like, his only story is that Joseph snapped and decides to try and just murder a bunch of people in this house. And he's the hero of the day and stands up and takes down the adversary. Not at all in Joseph's character.
And Joseph isn't the one with the record of past criminal behavior.
No, and it is not backed up by the version of events that the Kalmykovs have, who just say that, you know, they were here, they were doing a job, things were fine, and then we leave the room and this massive fight and ends in a shooting. So we will never know exactly what happened in that house that day and why it happened. That's just never been said, and I don't think it will. Ol was released on probation, like, immediately following his guilty plea. That just days afterwards, when they're checking up on him for probationary purposes, they find child pornography in his possession. Somehow he gets out of those charges.
He gets out of those charges, too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
No more jail time for Ol.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep, he's a free man.
That's a violation of parole. That's its own crime.
Mm-hmm. And he got those, like, written off. He had a good lawyer because they got him dismissed.
You just let him out because there isn't any room in prison.
Yeah, so.
You're going to put him back in there.
Jeez.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Joseph's sister, Kathleen, on the day that Ol Shangjin had been arrested, she is quoted in a newspaper as saying, "I've been diligently fighting for my brother in all of these 18 months and 14 days to see this come to justice."
Well, it wasn't.
And then to know that this happened just a couple of years later is devastating. I mean, it had to have hit the family so hard.
Right.
There was absolutely no news coverage of Ol's release at all. It radio silence from everybody. I think it's because a lot of it has to do with, like, so much of this was happening all over the state, and this was considered, like, low totem pole news anyway.
We're not going to draw attention to this.
But yeah, nothing came out that even talked about his sentencing, nothing like that. It was just like radio silence. I found out this information from CourtView, which is an Alaska website that is like public records of people. Yeah, CourtView, in the court system.
You can see where they're at.
Where they're at in the system.
Right.
Right. And I saw that he had been released because of this and had all those charges. And that's how I found that information. So that's where that's coming from. But there's been nothing that's come out since that says how the family is dealing with this news, that's even talked about this case since 2018. It hasn't even been on blip on the radar. That's kind of frustrating to me. Anyway,
no kidding.
There's a gun violence memorial page that I stumbled across during research. And it's public, and there's a whole post dedicated to Joseph Peterson, and a lot of his family and friends commented on it, just sweet things about his life. One of them that really stuck out to me was a family member who wrote that Joseph had the biggest heart, the brightest smile, and a heartwarming laugh. And it's just kind of sobering to think about, and very, it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next several years as we start to iron out this mess that was COVID in terms of justice and legal justice here in the state, because it impacted us pretty greatly. I know it did other places as well, but there were unforeseen consequences, I think, that nobody thought to consider.
Or how to deal with. I mean, there's just no answer, really.
Right. There's no
how to fix it
or easy
at the
solution.
Time how we could have handled
it better. But that is the case of Joseph Peterson.
Just people need to stop being bad and not do crime.
There's your message for the week, guys. It's so wholesome.
Just be good.
Just be good. Don't do
crime.
This. New Northern Nightmare slogan. Don't do crime. Give us a reason to stop the podcast. No.
Right?
Stop giving us content to report on. That is our case today.
If you like us, rate and review us. Five stars
listen.
Is great.
Excellent transition. I don't know how you transition out of that.
Well, we just did, so.
There it goes. It works. As always, we do have a Patreon page, and we've got to promote it or nobody will. But if you want to get some extra Northern Nightmares content, we release two extra full bonus episodes every month. There's one that's a true crime case from a different country. It's covered by me in the same styles as any other Northern Nightmares episode you'll listen to. And then Mom comes in usually towards the end of the month sometimes. It just depends on when the event is happening. But she comes in with an Alaskana case, which is what we affectionately call
palate cleanser.
Yeah, exactly. It's our time to sort of talk about events that are happening in Alaska, festivals, fairs, the history behind them, and the things you can do while you're up here, basically. A travel guide is what we should start calling it. But we talk about that, and it's a pretty fun time and just a great reprieve from yes. some of the heavy things that we talk about here. There's quite a little bit of backlog built up to this point, so go ahead and take a listen if you so desire.
Reach out to us on any of our social media platforms.
We love hearing from you.
Yeah, we're able to actually interact on those platforms, whereas we can't when you rank and review us on Apple Podcast or Spotify, so...
Right.
Keep the comments rolling. Talk to us. Reach out to us. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on TikTok. Find us.
Oh, yeah. All of the links to our social media will be in the description below. And we hope you guys stay safe and have an excellent week and don't do crime. And we'll see you back here for another regularly scheduled episode next week. Don't forget to take your vitamin D.
Bye.
Bye.